down to start this.
That's the best time you got here.
I'm on Parisian time.
So good morning, everyone. I'll let Dave get ready. This is the Monday, December 15, 2014 meeting of the Personnel Committee of the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. My name's Eric Marr, the Vice Chair of the committee. Can we have a roll call, Mr. Clerk?
Yes, thank you. On the roll for the Board of Directors Personnel Committee meeting of December 15th, 2014, Director Adams.
Here.
Director Groom.
Present.
Director Haggerty. Director Hudson.
Here.
Director Klatt. Committee Vice Chair Marr.
Here.
Director Pifo. Director Sparing.
Present.
Committee Chair Wagenknecht. We have established a quorum.
Thank you. Please call the next item, Mr. Gallagher.
The next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda matters. I do not have any requests from the public.
So I see no one from the public. Public comment is closed. Next is item three, approval of minutes.
I'll move the minutes.
So can we do this without objection?
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you. Next item, Mr. Gallagher.
Next item on the agenda, item number four, discussion regarding advisory council structure for 2015.
Mr. Broadbent.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the Personnel Committee. we've been working on a proposal for your consideration here this morning, and what this item is all about is to be able to seek your direction on the new structure of the advisory council that was established pursuant to SB 1415. So what we'd like to do for you today is give you a little bit of a sense of the staff's thinking as to how this new reconstituted advisory council would be structured, how it would operate, and really what its role and function would be here at the district. For this item, Dr. McKay is going to give you a presentation, and again, we're seeking your direction on this item.
Thank you, Jack. Chairperson Marr, members of the Personnel Committee, this is an informational item this morning. And as Jack has discussed with Senate Bill 1415, we've got some changes to our advisory council, and I'd like to review those with you. So these changes take effect as of July 1st, 2015, but because they do affect the makeup of the council, we do need to start thinking now about revising the council membership, and so that's why it's important we start informing the Personnel Committee now about what we are doing. 1415 retires the current membership of the Advisory Council and puts together a new council with seven members, and there's an important change with this in the description of the membership. The focus now on the membership is more specifically on air quality and on health, continuing with a term of 2 years. So a smaller group of people, more of a focus in that group on air quality and on health. So at the same time, although this group in its membership will have more of a focus on air quality and health, it has become clear in the past, as we work with the Advisory Council, that to attempt to find all deep subject matter expertise within the council and have it serve in that manner has not been ideal. The number of topics that we care about, the depth to which we wish to address them, quite large. And so it's important that we compose this council properly of folks with the most appropriate skill set to the function of the council. And so with this council, as we seek to recruit, we are looking certainly for people with technical abilities, people with scientific backgrounds, but also and especially folks capable of broad perspectives and people who are able to understand the district's role within the broad context of local, state, and federal regulation. And then as we seek to ensure that we have the broadest and deepest perspective on the individual topics that are brought up, we're going to work proactively, not just to find subject matter experts as topics are brought to the council, but rather to proactively seek to build a pool of subject matter experts who will agree proactively to serve on this pool. And part of the thinking here is that if we are really seeking to have some people of renown, they may be much more willing to serve with a low time commitment of this sort, where it might even be a few years before they're asked to come in and serve in their function addressing the council. So the idea would be here that our seven folks really have the technical chops to listen to a variety of perspectives on a variety of topics, and they will convene topics, convene groups of subject matter experts to do deep dives into topics at hand. So they'll be brought together to then address questions raised by the Air District Board and staff. And this is an important point. More explicitly, we want to make clear that the topics will come from the board as opposed to coming from the council. Certainly, we're, again, looking for these this group to provide authoritative expertise on the topics brought to them. And the method for that is this idea of the council as broadly capable conveners, bringing together whatever subject matter experts are most appropriate for the topic at hand. So it is still 7 months before we actually will be convening this, but it's very important that in order to obtain the best possible membership, we can begin working now. So we're working now to begin recruiting the members of the advisory council. We will also need to bring forward a revision to the Air District's admin code to make sure that it actually reflects the changes in the new modified health and safety code. And then we will also begin proactively recruiting a pool of subject matter experts to advise the advisory council. And that's this presentation. A brief presentation on the current status of this work.
That was helpful, just to get us, because we've heard about the new law and the new direction. We haven't had any time to talk about it. Commissioner Spearing. Commissioner Director.
Certainly. So just picking one example, let's say that we're seeking to build some internal knowledge base on a topic that's out there a ways. The effect of air pollution on autism could be an example. It's not imminent, but we feel that we need to build our level of expertise. So then the advisory council would seek to bring in subject matter experts who had particular depth on this topic, and then the result would be documentation created by staff to create an archive from those meetings, and as desired, we could have one of the subject matter experts or advisory council members then present to the board about that topic and what we heard.
Ask this board to recommend
something to the county? Because of the example you gave, I don't know that I see that coming from this board. So I was more concerned about types of things you would see coming from the board. But so would the staff make recommendations to us, say, here's things that we think you ought to?
Yes, if I can, Mr. Chairman. Director Spearing, I think through the course of the year, you're going to find if we can structure the advisory council, I think, correctly, is that it can play a role whereby they might actually play a role as part of the deliberations, wherein that you could be looking to us and we can say, that's a good question, let us go ahead and ask the advisory council to take a look at that and report it back at your next meeting. So on any given rule, any given program, any given specific policy that you all are going to be deliberating, there's going to come up, and this is pretty typical, as you all know, is there's going to be some type of issue that we think we might be able to pitch over to the scientist to be able to help in terms of answering the question. Now, you have a staff full of scientists, but I think it also might make some sense to have almost a third party, if you will, also help in these deliberations. If I can, I'll make another suggestion that, in addition to what Mr. McKay was suggesting. For example, we oftentimes get this question about what's the appropriate role for the district relative to climate change? How could we be applying our regulatory authority? And that's a very big, broad, sweeping question, but I can see a part of a conversation, particularly as we go down and develop our climate strategy, where you might want to be asking that question or even a more detailed question of that broader question about and having a set of scientists deliberate and come back and as part of that conversation. Does that help? I mean,
yeah, I'm suspicious. I'm just concerned about anything becoming politicized, and so I just want to make. I'm just trying to get an idea of the process. But I think you've answered my question.
Well, and the truth be known, actually, here I think if we create a scientific body that is your advisory council, it'll help in the politicizing of the issues. It'll help to bring more science to the
deep
equation,
politicizing, yeah.
Right? And that's the goal.
Director Hudson.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. It was one of our board members that said, why aren't we looking at black carbon more? And the advisory committee took off on it. I mean, I thought there was an excellent report. I still think they should be looking at it. They do pay attention. I like what I think I'm hearing. I'll just call it the second tier, the pool. And what I didn't hear specifically is they would be there for expertise, but wouldn't they also be the ground to draw from one of those other seven members, if not this time, the next time, or the time after, as they kind of get a taste of it? Is that the thinking that was going on here? Because I know in the last one I made a big issue about, we had a general manager of a mass transit firm apply, and I don't think we could have done any better. I look at the same way for the counties. We have their health officers, and I see them as, like you said, not having the time maybe to do advisory, but they find out after they've been at the pool and done some work that maybe they do, and I think it could be a tremendous advantage. I like the direction.
That's a good suggestion. We are hoping that this advisory council will be much more nimble and short-term in nature, because right now when we send them off, as you indicated, Director Hudson, they go off and they spend multiple meetings to deliberate on a question or an issue, and then they work on a paper. They spend multiple meetings wordsmithing a paper, and then they come back literally 6 months later. And we think, frankly, we need to have something that is much more short-term. We can ask the question, they can come back. And that's really the intent behind this.
Director Morrow.
Let me just ask, Mr. McKay, whenever we go from a 17-member body that's represented from Dr. Bornstein and represented by colleges and universities, or Anna Alvarez from our Recreation and Parks Department and so many others, I think it's a body that has a wide diversity of knowledge that is our advisory committee. Anytime we go down from a larger number to a smaller number, it probably increases efficiency, as probably Senator Jerry Hill intended, but I think it tends to reduce democracy or more input and ideas from a more diverse group of people. but I know we have to abide by state law. But I'm just hoping that the seven appointed still can not only have tremendous expertise, but also regional and a wide range of knowledge like our past body did. So I have some concerns. It seems anti-democratic, but it seems more pro-efficiency. So I see the benefits, but I'm hoping that we still look at an extremely diverse geographically and knowledge-wise body of people. But could you just talk about that issue?
Certainly. It is absolutely true that the 1415 Amendment provides more of a focus on knowledge of air quality and health in the membership of the Advisory Council. And so in the spirit of that, the district is also looking for that council to somewhat more explicitly be able to speak authoritatively, as Jack has indicated, on scientific topics. So there is, in a sense, a narrowing in that way, but it is narrowed in a way that's supposed to focus on the function of the Advisory Council. Certainly, to your point, absolutely not in any way take away representation from a broad group of people.
If I can also, Mr. Chairman, you'll be hearing more about this as part of your retreat, but as part of our expanded and reestablished community program, we are contemplating a staff being able to recommend to you a community council that will be really serve this function of really being getting the input from the community in a staff to community way through a little bit more of a formal process. And we're going to be essentially taking those members from the Advisory Council that wouldn't necessarily serve in this scientific body here and really maybe serve in this community council idea. So the concern and or at least the suggestion you're making is not lost, and that it's going to, I think, reestablish itself through our community council.
So to have a kind of a scientific board and then a broader community board. Director Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for being late. I'm sure others have prior to me, but California just can't drive when it's raining. I don't get it. I mean, but we also close schools when it's raining, where the East Coast tends to laugh at us.
Yeah.
Poor kids have to go to school in the snow. You know, I've struggled with this one from the beginning. There's a lot of well-intended people that currently sit on the Advisory Council. And although I heard what you just said about the Community Council, and I have to be honest, that's the first time I've heard that, starts to alleviate some of the fears. But I have to tell you, I'm not quite sure that we always need air experts sitting on the boards. I think sometimes we need people with pure common sense. And now we're going to have people that think just like staff, and they're going to be air experts. And I don't think we're going to get the people that are going to say, well, wait a minute, did you actually think about this? So I'm really fearful of this whole thing. And I don't know, how are we going to abolish, or how are we going to remove the ones that are on the board? For example, maybe those who are just appointed within the last year. Have we thought about that?
Yeah, so the law calls for the reestablishment of a council starting July 1st, seven members. Those members are appointed by this board. So what the law now calls for this council to essentially replace the one that's in place already.
Well, I understand all that.
So it says air quality expertise, it says climate, public health, that we have to meet those criteria.
I know, but who's going to represent agriculture on this?
Well, and as I indicated earlier, we want to make sure that we bring to you a recommendation on this community council that will have a lot of that type of background, and it makes sense to have someone from the agricultural community serving on the community council. What we're trying to do here, though, is, and you know this, Director Haggerty, is really just try to establish a scientific body for us. And
that's you guys.
Well, we think that, you know, we certainly have a whole set of scientists, planners, chemists, engineers, but we think it makes sense to also have the broader scientific community represented in a group, and we think that you all will benefit from that. We do.
I don't think that'll help me, Jack. I have to be honest with you, and that's okay. I mean, I can be the one that says that I don't think we're doing the right thing, and I just like to say I don't really continue to feel this way. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll accept that, but I think originally we had kind of talked about this because the council was maybe staff intensive, and I'm trying to choose my words, and I thought that had something to do with it, the relationship, not the relationship, but maybe the amount of staff time that was being spent on the council. And now we're going to have a council that is made up of scientists and such that will probably require more. And now we're going to also engage a community council, which will even be more. So I'm not sure we're really achieving our original goal. And I think that this is just, in the sum, I think it's just opening up Pandora's box. And I think when you get this community council together, it's going to be a council of advocates that are, you know, here for, you know, one reason. And you're not going to get just the diverse mix of people anymore that care about how air quality affects farming. And so, you know, I think we're heading the wrong track. And I think it was our staff that actually approached Hill. So I don't blame Hill. But I wish that this bill wouldn't have happened, to be very honest with you. I think we should have just refined and made better what we had.
Well, if I can, Mr. Chairman, let us make sure that we bring back, ultimately, when we do start to create and put in place this community council, that this committee here understands and sees what we're recommending, that for the body that would include the community council, so that it starts to get, I think, the concern that Director Haggerty is raising.
What I see is that this new scientific body is, I know we have a lot of scientists in our organization. That's what we are, but we have daily jobs to do, and sometimes you're so active at looking at the trees in this in the things that we're doing that you can't see the bigger picture of the issues, and that's kind of what I see the science panel being able to do. I will be happy to see the community council kind of going in tandem with this. Director Adams.
Thank you. So if I understand the structure correctly, we've narrowed the advisory council, or the decision-making body who's going to make the recommendations to our board, down to 7. And we're still considering how we're going to incorporate the other expertise, the ag, the business, fire, transit, education, parks, all of the really important perspectives that we had previously. And, you know, in modeling after some of the things we've done with our own commissions in our county, while we may have 7 park commissioners, we have a very vibrant subcommittees of different expertise areas. So if within the context of this 7 body advisory council now, we can create, you know, the subcommittee context so that the whole, you know, committee and subcommittee members at some occasion can get together to sort of weigh in on some of the things that are coming out. I think that that's going to be an important component. I agree with my colleagues when, you know, we want to be cautious about not eliminating those really valuable voices. And then the other piece, I think, that kind of gets to what Commissioner or Director Haggerty was expressing on the issue of community and the science. And we actually have a great deal of science, a really vibrant and rich body of science. But I think one of our challenges is how do we implement the science into actual action, community action? How do we engage the broader community to understand the science in a simpler form where they can become inspired to work with us to actually make the big changes that we're trying to make? And I think that's a part of it that's going to require a deeper access into the communities to try to help explain it to them, make them, help them feel involved in the process. And I think if we stay too restrictive with just the science component, I think we lose that perspective. And some, who, I don't know which one of you said the common sense piece, the how about this, that maybe the people that are deeply enmeshed in the scientific field may not, you know, be thinking of, but that deserve conversation. And then my final suggestion would be that in the presentation you said that the board and staff would be directing what projects the advisory council would be looking at. But I do think if we have this really talented body of advisory council members and they come up with an idea in their understanding of cutting-edge research that we should be looking at, that there should be a mechanism for them to communicate that to us so that we can consider whether or not to give them direction to dive into that content. So those would be my suggestions.
That's a good point. I think, if I may, in particular, I think wood smoke is a great example of where education of the public is so important, to your point about educating the public on science, even if the science is a little obscure.
Director Hudson.
Yeah, I don't want to get away from what we're kind of dancing around here. I think Scott is on to something with the common sense. And if you're what we're looking at is the science more than it being scientists. Scientists just sometimes look at numbers and completely miss the trees in the forest. An example to me on ag, these are, we have, at least as long as I've been on the board, have always been thinking of ag as people with their hands in the dirt. But we appointed a conservation attorney. Now, if we have a conservation attorney as the ag component of this seven-person board, we darn sure, at least in that underlying pool, I'll call it, should have somebody with some common sense ag. I said the same thing about the transit component. We have somebody that deals with the numbers versus somebody that has to deal with all aspects daily. So what I'm asking is, when you make up one pool or the other, or I guess we're doing some of the pointing, that there really be this concerned effort, because we do a cutting away usually when the personnel looks at, we don't look at everybody, we look at a final pool, that a lot of litany tests be given to having common sense in the ground type components of that field. Because I too have the same fear that we could end up being an advocacy group over being someone that's supposedly advising us.
You're talking about the community.
Yeah, having at least one or the other. Because you can only have one person group. You should at least have somebody in the underlying pool that can get that different point of view. Whoops, I'm sorry, I guess you turned this on when you're talking. The difference between a conservation lawyer for a trust and an ag person who's digging potatoes in the morning is just a different world, yet they're filling the same spot, and you're not getting the same common sense opinion. Is what I'm looking for, is the common sense opinion.
So, Mr. Chairman, what we're trying to do here, and I can tell that what we'll do is, when we get this a little more fully fleshed out, we'll bring it back to the Personnel Committee. Something that probably needs to be said that wasn't said at the very beginning, this process we're trying to create is actually something that's done at the national level. There is what's called the Clean Air Act Scientific Advisory Council. What they do is a set of conveners, and then they pull upon the subject matter experts when a particular question is posed by EPA. EPA staff will say, we want this council to address this question for us for our next rulemaking, our next deliberations. So that process works quite well, and that's what I'm trying to create here on a very local, regional basis, just given who we have in our backyard. We have, you know, Cal, Stanford, everybody in our backyard. So it really does make sense, I think, to have this approach explored a little bit further. So let me bring this back to you. And we'll bring it back at the same time that we also start to show you the community council as well.
I have one more from Director Haggerty.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that as this committee does move forward, because obviously it's here to stay, the thing that I will be really concerned about is the diversity of the council, but also the geographical diversity too. Nothing against my colleague from San Francisco. There's a lot of fine people here in this community. But I would be really upset if everybody here was from, everybody on this council was, you know, representative of San Francisco. And I'm just using San Francisco as an example. I mean, the same could be said for Alameda. I'd be upset. Well, I probably wouldn't be upset if I came from Alameda, but maybe Santa Clara. Yeah.
Okay, okay. Are we going to move on at this point to the...
Thank you.
I think updating this in the future is the right idea. At this point, we're going to move on to 5. Consider recommending Board of Directors approval of incumbent reappointments to the Air District Advisory Council.
So, yes, Chair Wagon Connect and members of the Personnel Committee. So, we have our current Advisory Council continuing to operate. They have 2-year terms, and some of the advisory council, current advisory council members, 2-year terms are up this month, and they would like to be reappointed, and we support that. So before you today is a reappointment of incumbent advisory council members for the first half of 2015. So they will continue to operate as the advisory council. We'll continue to work with them on their topics and through the first 6 months of 2015, and they would like to bring their recommendations to you next year, and we will also have a recognition of those advisory council members.
I would like that.
Yeah.
I'll move staff recommendation.
Well, I have a
she can talk.
I'll take your motion. Do I have a second? Okay, I've got a second.
And just a question, but the members do understand that everything changes, and this is just a short-term reappointment, right?
They do. We've talked about this with the current advisory council members. They're interested in continuing with their topics and also just giving us some feedback on their experience as we consider the new council as well. So,
right. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
A question, Director Haggerty.
How's been the sometimes the easiest sentences are hard to put together. The attendance for the members that we're reappointing has been good?
Yes, it's been good. It's been fine. Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to reappoint the members that are termed off in December. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That passes unanimously. Is that good enough for you, Sean? What do you need to do?
It's good enough for me. State law directs us to have something
law, Sean.
In the record. Orally. Let the record reflect that Directors Adams, Groom, Haggerty, Hudson, Marr, Sparing, Wagonet Connect, and Miley voted aye, without any directors voting nay or to abstain, and all other directors being noted absent. The motion carries.
Okay. On to Item 6, presentation of the Air District's Administrative Code Division 3, Personnel Policies and Procedures, Section 2, Equal Employment Opportunity Policy and Equal Employment Opportunity Plan. And this came to us, we've asked for this because we've had a couple of hearings that have kind of gotten us to think, what is our policy and how are we doing on this?
Right, Mr. Chairman. So for this item, Rex Sanders, our new administration director, is going to give you a presentation.
Good morning, Chair Wagon Connect, members of the Personnel Committee. I'm happy to present the presentation on the Air District's Equal Employment Opportunity Policy and Plan. To give you the purpose of the plan, is to provide equal employment opportunities for all persons to be recruited, employed, placed, selected for training, trained, evaluated, promoted, laid off, terminated, compensated, assigned work, and otherwise treated without regard to race, religious creed, color, national origin, ancestry, disability, medical condition, marital status, sex, age, or sexual orientation. To give you a little bit of history on the plan, here at the Air District, the policy is located in our Administrative Code, Division 3, Section 2. It was adopted by the Board of Directors back in the 1960s, and we recently had a couple of revisions to the policy and plan. In 2011, the Board adopted a change to all references from affirmative action to equal employment opportunity as provided by Proposition 209. And then most recently this year, the Board modified the appeal process to allow the executive officer to make the final decision on EEO complaints. So there's also an equal employment opportunity plan, and that plan implements the policy. And the last plan was also adopted or changed on this year in 2014 to modify the appeals process. So a good place to see the equal employment opportunity policy in being implemented here at the Air District is through our recruitment processes. And I recognize that this slide has quite a bit of information on it.
A lot of type here.
Yeah, a lot of type here. But to summarize it for you, the point is that for our recruitments, for new candidates and promotions, those recruitment processes are merit-based and designed to remove any opportunities for any personal bias. We have things such as, in the vacancy announcement, making sure that the qualifications are job-related. We also have screening panels that are done blindly, so we remove all persons' names, addresses, references, so that folks on the panel are really focused on the candidate's qualifications and skills and not any other information that might bias them in the process. So there's a number of other EEO-related provisions, both in our administrative code and in our memorandum of understanding with the Employees Association, and these are just a few of them. Are you there? And that wraps up my brief presentation, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Are there questions at this point? Director Adams.
Thank you. As we're looking at implementing policies about equal opportunity, are we tracking how we're doing with different employment groups within our different divisions? For example, gender, age, race, without saying names, but just to see who's where in which divisions, engineering, management, clerical.
Yeah, great question. We do an analysis once every 5 years. The last one was done in 2011, and it showed that the Air District, absent of Proposition 209, or what was required under affirmative action, is doing a good job in hiring and keeping a diverse workforce. The next analysis is due to be done in 2016 to see kind of where we've come since then. Anecdotally, I can tell you that the Air District has most recently made a number of hires, so those people have been women and folks of minorities, so I'm very happy to see that.
So in areas such as management and, salary equities, especially in the area of gender issues, are we diving down into the weeds on that? And are we using the information? It seems like 5 years is a long time, especially as you're planning for retirements and succession planning, to not know what's coming except every 5 years, maybe every 2 or 3 years might be considered.
Yeah, I like that suggestion.
And if I can also, Director Adams, we went through a process of standardizing the salaries across all, like for all the managers on all the different divisions are paid now the same. So we made those changes, 5, 6 years ago, something like that. So it also, it just made it so that, one, you can move folks around. It was very self-serving on our part. But also, it addressed this issue if there were any disparity between a manager in one division versus another. So.
But the issue of perhaps looking at it more closely, was there a reason for 5 years being chosen as the tracking time?
Well, I think that, you know, after Proposition 209 came into effect, it really stopped the process of looking at making, you know, certain quotas based on race, although our analysis continues, and I think it's a great idea to maybe look at it more often and to check in, especially considering some of the retirements that are happening.
For long-term planning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say it's an ongoing review we do, Dr. Adams. I think what we're referring to is more the formal process of bringing it to you. But it's something that we do as a normal course, that we look at our workforce and strive to be able to have the workforce here reflect the Bay Area. So,
in our county, we've been finding that we have probably a third of our employees are going to be leaving us within the next 5 years. That's why I'm asking, because a third of your workforce leaving, and without, you know, sort of some clear ideas on, you know, how we're going to maybe perhaps use it as an opportunity to restructure how we do business, also how and where we're going to tap into recruitment opportunities for the new thinkers. It gives you a little bit more of a glide path. So we're in hustle mode now in our county, but and they're changing it up so that we can actually look at it with a little bit shorter intervals, so that we're not caught like that in the future.
Well, if I can, Mr. Chairman, so the same thing is going on here. So you have how much? The average age is 52, 53, something like that here at the district, right. And you have a considerable amount of folks here that are eligible to retire. We think the building move might do that, but also some other things in the works. So the management team just met last week. We're going to be bringing to this committee and the full board a strategic staffing plan that will include the succession planning efforts to really hopefully bring in younger folks into the workforce here at the district to refresh and really those that are going to be leaving and retiring, we think. So you'll hear more about that beginning of next year.
Thank you. Director Marr.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders, for the report. I'm always uncomfortable when we are deleting or watering down references to gender justice, racial justice, affirmative action, and other issues like that. But I understand that Prop 209, which I believe passed in 1996,
that's right,
requires us to change methods. But why did it take 15 years for us to eliminate that term affirmative action? Because you refer to 209 here. Why did it take that long? Why are we doing it now? Or in 2011 we did it. So why did it take that long?
Well, I believe that, you know, in 2011, we had a human resources review done of all of our policies, and this was one that was outdated based on the, you know, kind of common practice out there. And so it was recommended to us at that time to make the changes to comply with 209. So it was just a little bit of a catching up game, I think.
And then from our March meeting, I'm trying to remember, I think the issue was about promotions and a lack of fairness for opportunities for management experience for people of color and women. And I'm just wondering what in our new processes ensures that management assignments are going to be even-handed, so that people have an equal shot at developing management experience, so that that can be considered for promotions.
Well, Director Marr, that's actually something that is a direction that's provided to all my deputies and directors and managers, so that everyone is given equal opportunity to, in terms of assignments, that will allow them then to be considered for promotion. So I think, if I recall, the Personnel Committee heard They had items that you all wanted us to come back relative to what steps we're taking to avoid favoritism. I think, is that what I might be talking about? So I think after that meeting, direction was provided, and all promotions actually go through me, actually, and I sign all promotions and hires, and so it's something that is done as part of a review with myself and my deputies to ensure that there is equal access to all, both internally and as well as our external recruitments. We're always striving to be able to help diversify the workforce. So beyond that, we didn't think it made sense for us to bring back any kind of specific policy for the board, but if the committee would like to see us do that, we can certainly entertain that if you'd like.
I guess I would just like to keep that issue open as it was brought up to us, and to just know explicitly what we do to ensure that there's that fairness, which I am sure there is.
Yeah, that's our goal, obviously. Director Spearing.
What does it mean when you say the district will analyze the workforce and the population of the area?
Are you looking at the plan?
In the staff report?
Oh, in the staff report. So I think, what Jack said earlier is relevant here, which is, we look at in 2011 and again in 2016, we look at the population diversity in the San Francisco Bay Area. In relation to our own diversity here in the workforce, to see that there are similarities in race and gender. Well, I think then we start to look at, opportunities in our own processes where we can achieve those, similarities and sort of reaching people, promotions, looking at our processes to make sure that they're fair. And that we are really removing all opportunities for personal bias in the recruitment process.
Yeah, as long as what you're telling me is that you're going to make sure that no specific group is being penalized or disadvantaged, I think that's the approach. You're going to use that population number to say, well, we have to hire that number of kids.
No, we can't do that. Yeah, we don't do that any longer, but.
On the next page where on the discrimination complaint, you have 10 days. Is there any exception to that? I mean, I could see a situation where it's done more than 10 days. We have some qualification in there for legal reasons that we, if there's a problem or an exception or something happens.
We do show flexibility with all of those deadlines. Yeah. Right.
What? And on page 8, when you talk about the employers, over 150 employers, who's the employee?
Oh, that's the analysis, job group analysis.
On page 8.
It's part of our plan. I think that's taken from the law, right?
Yeah. So that's just saying any employee, not just.
That's just law, yeah.
Okay. It just seems like that's written in a third party. I guess maybe that's the way it's written. To me, it ought to say our department or something. But the last thing is on the human resources officer. And this might be nitpicking, but I really think that the human resource officer ought to be monitored. Training programs are available.
if we can, Director Spearing, a lot of the training is provided by admin. So the divisions approach the administrative office asking for a training program to be developed for a specific need, and they put it together is how it pretty much works here, although there is other training that goes on. I'll just mention also that a lot of what we struggle here at the district has to do with, an employees association, and that has been around for many, many years. And, it's part of our family of who we are. But I only mention that because one effort that we continue to try to figure out and maybe explore, and I want to do this, continue to do this with the employees association, is figure out a way in which I can create a pool of people we can pull from into the future from the outside. A pool of experts, if you will, and call it whatever they are, air quality specialists, that any division can tap into. And it's kind of where a lot of employers are going. A lot of public agencies are going this way as well, because you can get a good qualified list of folks that on an as-needed basis you pull from. Believe it or not, though, that has been difficult to try to pull off. So only because we have so many categories. I forget how many categories we have here. What, 180 categories of different staff,
job
people,
classifications.
Job classifications, if you can believe that. So I only mention that because some of what we're talking about here flies in the face of the institutional structure we have in place here, and it's slowly, hopefully, going to change to make us more maneuverable, and therefore we can also address a lot of the concerns you all are raising here today as well about diversity and nimbleness of the organization.
It just seemed like that one appeal that we had, one of the issues implied there wasn't much transparency, and that's kind of what I was more concerned about. You know, I think the right decision was made, and I think staff did a good job, but I just, you know, if there's any way that you can strengthen that part of the transparency piece, I think it just reduces the conflicts in any appeals.
That's a good point.
Director Groom.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd like to know a little bit more about the education opportunities and the training opportunities that we have. Do we have a tuition credit fund for employees to dip into? And do we do internal and external training and provide, you know, are there certifications or education credits that are offered there too? I wonder if we have some more information about that. Not necessarily today, but
right.
In the
we
future.
Can bring that back if you'd like.
Good.
Thank you.
Director Adams.
Thank you. On the point that Director Spearing raised about population analysis, I think what we found is that if you look globally at population analysis, sometimes it doesn't fit because the actual pool of the trained people within certain categories is limited. And we found that especially in the area of engineering. Very few women engineers, even people of color, you know, it doesn't match what our population demographics looks like, and it really indicated to us the need to work more closely with our secondary institutions of education to help, you know, put out some more folks who have a wider perspective and reflect more of the diverse population. So I just wanted to, you know, point that out, that the global analysis may not actually help you when you're actually looking at what we're doing here, unless you really look at different categories of groups of employees that we have.
That gets back to Director Groom's getting further downstream and seeing where upstream, seeing where the people can be coming from. Any other questions at this point? So I think the direction that we're asking for at this point is kind of go into those promotion and education opportunities that we do here. And Director Hudson.
Sorry, as a point of clarity, I think you're asking for direction. Are we also including Attachment A, or is he coming up? Are you going to that next? Because I did have one comment on A. I'll get to it. It's Measure G in the sexual harassment on page 4. And I think part of the problem is when you do these things and you go to the global, all businesses, and then down to the district and the global, and it's almost a classic example here. It talks about the basic standard on the first line, everybody, individuals, and then the district will therefore ensure, so we're back into the workplace. Then the next line says sexual harassment is defined by the equal employment, so we're out to the whole global thing, and it's the next line. It includes, but is not limited to, the following unwelcome sexual advances. I mean, this is opposed to welcome sexual advances in the workplace. I don't know. I don't want to change what they have if it's state or federal law, but I think you really bring up a problem if you just leave that line there. The next line, I think, covers it. Other verbal or physical contact of sexual nature. It's almost as if you could add a parenthesis or something in there. I mean, I don't know what it is about this one item, but it seems to just draw the attention of everybody, especially when you're trying to make an issue out of somebody's employment record. It has nothing to do with their employment record. It becomes sexual harassment almost by default. Just a concern of mine. If it's not from anybody else, so be it. But when I saw that as unwelcome sexual, I go, okay. So if I go by and make, you know, and oddly enough, that seems to change with time. What's unwelcome today was welcome before. Just something to consider, maybe a memo or something when you're defining it. It bothered me, but it doesn't seem to bother others.
That particular language is drawn from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission regulations. So we're just repeating verbatim what the standard is, and I don't really want to get into the issue of unwanted
versus wanted. Okay, no problem. I looked at it, Brian.
But there is, for exactly the reason you identify, there is flexibility in the standard because human beings are what they are, and the mores change over time, and that has been one of the issues with this entire field. But that's why the language is there.
Any other questions at this point? Wanted or unwanted?
Don't want one.
And this was just to give direction.
It's a follow-up. Right.
Bridge too far.
No. Okay. At this point, we're number 7. Committee member comments or other business? Looking up and down?
No. Well, today's my last personnel committee meeting with you all. Well, it's been fun.
It's been fun. Thank you. And the time and place of the next meeting is at the call of the chair. At this point, we are adjourned. I think what's the next? The building committee?
The ad hoc building oversight committee meeting will start at 11 a.m.
Right. 11 a.m.
In this room? Oh, yeah.
Yes, in this room.
So, have fun.
Sparren, are you leaving?
No, he's...